pecked at it, then stared at his desktop screen. Even with his alien powers to influence human minds, it took Stoner nearly half an hour to convince Bakhtiar that he was the Star Voyager whose messages to Earth had been ignored for months. "My brother believes you are a fraud, a trick played by pranksters." "That would make his life easier, wouldn't it?" Stoner replied. "And you are causing the Aurori? Deliberately?" "I thought it would be a signal that no one could ignore. Apparently I was wrong." Bakhtiar pursed his lips. Then in a taut, keyed-up voice he said, "So what you are telling me is that traveling at relativistic velocity moves you from one universe to another universe, a parallel universe?" Stoner nodded unhappily. "I'm not enough of a theoretiker to understand the physics involved, but this world that I've returned to is somewhat different from the one I left." "Fascinating. You've been to the stars? Actually? Really?"
"Actually," Stoner replied. "Really."
"Which stars? What was it like?"
Bakhtiar was bobbing up and down with excitement in his swivel chair.
"You must tell me everything."
"In time," Stoner replied calmly. "In due time." He saw disappointment flash through the astronomer. And then something else. Bakhtiar was thinking of his brother, Stoner realized.
"Can you tell me about your starship, then? What drives it? What is your propulsion source?"
"Electromagnetic induction," Stoner answered. Ordinarily, he would have been pleased to talk about science to a fellow scientist. But Bakhtiar was asking now for the benefit of his brother, the chief of the Revolutionary Guard.
"I don't understand," Bakhtiar admitted.
"You think of interstellar space as a vacuum, but in reality it's drenched with energy," Stoner explained. "The ship absorbs that energy. When we make the aurora glow, we're actually recharging the ship's energy storage." They talked for more than an hour, Stoner answering each of Bakhtiar's questions as fully and honestly as he could, although he carefully avoided any mention of what he'd found among the stars. As he spoke about the starship, he clearly sensed that in the back of Bakhtiar's mind there was a tendril of thought that realized his brother would kill whole armies to get his hands on this powerful alien technology. Stoner could see it in Bakhtiar's face, his realization, his sudden anguish. "I can't tell my brother about this," Bakhtiar was thinking. "I can't breathe a word of this to anyone." And Stoner understood. "You know about the nuclear weapons, don't you?" Bakhtiar twitched as though jabbed by the point of a knife.
"Iran announced nuclear weaponry after the final Israeli war," he said in a monotone, as if reciting a lesson learned by rote.
"Were there any left?" Stoner asked.
"The Israelis struck us first. We retaliated in self-defense."
"Yes, of course."
"After the war, we renounced nuclear weapons and scrapped the few that remained. We saw to it that Greater Iran and all the nations of Islam were cleansed of all such weapons."
"But now your nation is building new nukes at a secret facility near Shar-e-Babak." Bakhtiar's face went white. "Your brother told you about it, didn't he?" For a moment, Bakhtiar was silent. Then,
He asks me for scientific advice. He doesn't altogether trust the state's scientists."
Stoner thought the astronomer looked thoroughly miserable, ashamed. But then he blurted,
"The Americans are building nuclear weapons, and they despise Islam. They want to destroy us. We must have our own weapons for our self-defense."
Ignoring his outburst, Stoner asked calmly, "Greater Iran is officially an Islamic republic, yet it's actually ruled by the Council of Mullahs, isn't it?" Bakhtiar's face twisted into a bitter smile.
"That is almost correct. The Council of Mullahs and their Ulma can negate laws passed by the parliament if they find that the laws are contrary to Sharia.
Rather like the Supreme Court of the United States can nullify laws passed by your Congress." "The Mullahs are ultra-conservative in their interpretations of the law," said Stoner.
"Extremely.
Yet they're allowing this nuclear weapons program to go forward."
"They don't even know about it."
Stoner felt surprised. "How can that be?" Leaning slightly forward over his desk, Bakhtiar lowered his voice and said, "Everyone thinks that the mullahs and their ulma are the final authority in Greater Iran. Even the mullahs themselves think so. But the real power lies with the military command. The mullahs control the people, but the military controls the mullahs."
Stoner leaned back in his chair and rubbed his beard, thinking. At last he said, "In the United States, the government is controlled by a religious movement.
The new morality, yes, I know.
But here in Greater Iran, the religious movement,
the light of Allah,
they're actually controlled by your military."
"It's a delicate balance, but yes," said Bakhtiar. "My brother and his fellow Revolutionary Guard officers hold the true power."
"And they're building nuclear weapons?"
"Yes."
"So are the Americans, in New Mexico," Stoner said. "And the Chinese." Bakhtiar's shoulders slumped.
"The fools. The utter insane fools. I told my brother. I tried to make him see."
"It's only a matter of time before other nations start their own nuclear weapons programs. Each one will act in its own self-defense. Each one will be another step toward disaster."
"Proliferation," Bakhtiar murmured.
Stoner got up from his chair. "This must be stopped."
"But how?"
"I don't know. Not yet." He turned to leave.
"Wait!"
Bakhtiar cried, jumping to his feet.
"You, all that you've told me, I think they may be listening. My brother might have bugged my office. He's like that."
With a curt nod, Stoner replied, "He has. But don't worry about it. You can tell him anything I told you."
"About your starship?"
Bakhtiar asked in a hollow voice.
"About the technology you have at your fingertips? He'd kill to get his hands on it."
Smiling tightly, Stoner said, "I've been in that situation before. Don't worry, I can take care of myself." And he winked out of existence, leaving Bakhtiar standing behind his desk, wide-eyed, his mouth agape. Chapter 14. Stoner was also in China, in the Forbidden City in Beijing, deep inside that complex of palaces and museums, in an area where neither tourists nor foreign dignitaries were ever allowed. He projected himself directly into the bedroom of Ling Po, chairman of China's National Assembly and head of the New Dao movement, bypassing the guards and soldiers who patrolled the gardens outside and every corridor within the ornate palace. Ling Po was deeply asleep, together with two of his women. Stoner woke only the chairman, stroking his mind with a feather-light mental touch while making certain that the women remained sleeping. Ling Po woke slowly, cracked his eyes open slightly, stretched and yawned. Then he saw Stoner standing over him and leaped out of bed as if he'd been scalded by boiling water. Naked, hairless, looking like a scrawny, plucked chicken, he screamed for his bodyguards. "They can't hear you," Stoner said in flawless Mandarin. "No one can except me." Ling Po turned and pounded on his bedside phone console, to no avail. Then he yanked open the night table drawer and pulled out an automatic pistol. Stoner had to suppress his urge to laugh at the sight of this skinny, bony, bald, naked man struggling to cock the pistol and point it at him with wildly shaking hands. "The gun won't fire," Stoner said. Heedless, Ling Po strained to pull the trigger anyway until sweat broke out across his bald pate. Even with the considerable mental powers that the alien's technology had given Stoner, it took nearly a quarter of an hour before Ling Po calmed down enough to speak with reasonable composure to this man who had abruptly materialized in his bedroom. While Stoner assured the chairman that he meant no harm, Ling Po finally gave up trying to fire the useless pistol and threw it onto the bed. "You recognize my face, don't you?" Stoner asked calmly. "I'm the Star Traveler. I beamed my message to you, and you completely ignored it." Still totally naked, Ling Po plopped himself down on a corner of the rumpled bed. "You wouldn't answer my message," Stoner continued, sweetly reasonable, "so I decided to speak to you in person."
"You are the Star Devil," Ling Po said almost sullenly. "I believe it."
Stoner smiled. "Good.
Now we can talk man to man.